This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Investors say boo to Yahoo.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Yahoo is living on the edge with its shareholders. This weekend, the company rejected a higher buyout offer from Microsoft, and Microsoft said, okay, see you later. That prompted a lot of Yahoo investors to part with their shares. Yahoo's stock is down 19% this morning. Amy Scott tells us what might be next in this saga.
With the Yahoo deal scuttled for now, analysts say Microsoft will look for a new partner. The software giant wants a bigger piece of the online advertising market. Clayton Moran tracks the industry for Stanford Group. He says a deal with a company like AOL, Fox Interactive, which owns MySpace, or CNET, could help Microsoft compete with Google.
AOL's the next biggest player. They do bring some size, they bring scale, they bring a decent brand name.
But AOL may have another suitor, Yahoo. Then again, Yankee Group analyst Laura DiDio says if Yahoo can't sustain its recent growth, it may not be too late for a Microsoft-Yahoo deal.
Microsoft could circle back around and get them for a more reasonable price towards the end of the year.
Stanford Group's Clayton Moran says for now Google is the big winner. Its two biggest competitors remain separate, and Yahoo may be under pressure to expand its advertising partnership with Google. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Mobile phone companies have gobbled each other up to the point where there's only a handful of big ones left in the U.S., and there's talk of another deal this morning. Deutsche Telekom is said to be interested in buying Sprint Nextel. Still really early, but if it did happen, AT&T would no longer be the big shot of U.S. phone companies. It would be Deutsche Telekom, Sprint Nextel, T-Mobile. Deutsche Telekom already owns T-Mobile. Sprint shares are up about 6% this morning. But the rest of the market is down. The Dow has fallen 49 points in early trading. The NASDAQ is down a point, so is the S&P 500. The markets in Tokyo and London were closed for holidays. Otherwise, stocks finished mixed in Asia, and European shares are down a fraction. The price of uranium has shot up to record levels, and that has sparked a mining boom in Western states. Uranium, of course, is used for nuclear power. Some people love nuclear energy as a future alternative. But a report out today from an environmental group says runoff from this mining could contaminate the Colorado River. The river supplies 25 million people with their drinking water. Jeremy Hobson has more.
Richard Wiles, who directs the Environmental Working Group, says health effects of mining runoff should be of concern even if you don't live in the Southwest.
The Colorado River is a source of irrigation water for a huge portion of the winter vegetable crop in this country. Contaminating that irrigation water with uranium would be a very bad idea.
Researchers have linked uranium to cancer, but the government appears powerless to stop the mining because of an 1872 law that makes it easy and cheap to mine public lands. The House has passed a bill to reform the law.
There'd be a sort of regulatory framework set up to make sure the mining was done correctly and that there was a fair return to the taxpayer.
Lauren Pagel of Earthworks says a companion measure has stalled in the Senate. The mining industry says the reforms would cripple business and lead to an increased dependence on foreign metals and materials. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Sorry, I got something caught in my throat. Anyway, what an opening weekend for Marvel Studios' first release. Iron Man brought in $100 million in North America. That's well short of Spider-Man 3's record, $151 million, but Iron Man also raked in another $100 million overseas. This is the Morning Report for Monday, May 5th on Marketplace.org. The House debates a $300 billion housing rescue package this week. The crux of it is the FHA could insure new, cheaper mortgages for people facing foreclosure. That is, if lenders go along with it. And therein lies the major hang-up with this bill. Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
The federal government would agree to insure risky loans only if lenders voluntarily trimmed the amount borrowers owed. Fat chance, says Alan Fishbein of the Consumer Federation of America.
It does involve a major haircut on their part, and they may prefer to wait.
The bill's sponsor, Massachusetts Democrat Barney Frank, says there is a way to force lenders into the barber's chair. He wants the bill to give bankruptcy judges the right to lower mortgages. Frank couldn't include that in his bill because that's Judiciary Committee territory. He chairs the House Financial Services Committee. But his bill could be amended on the House floor. Otherwise, Frank says lenders can thumb their noses at Congress.
We're telling people, we wish you would use this alternative process. Some of them will say, well, I can make more money foreclosing, so the hell with you.
Lenders are lobbying furiously against any move to give judges the power to adjust mortgages. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
There's a guy named Jeffrey Hollander who works as an unpaid environmental advisor to Walmart. His day job is CEO of Seventh Generation. It makes non-toxic household products. Hollander blogs about his opinions on what constitutes a green company. When is a business green and when are they faking it? Our sustainability reporter Sarah Gardner caught up with Hollander to ask that very question.
First off, Jeffrey Hollander wants you to know even his company's not perfect.
We make mistakes. We make compromises.
Hollander was painfully reminded of that in March. The Organic Consumers Association took Seventh Generation to task for calling its dish soap natural while still containing traces of a suspected carcinogen. That may help explain the first of his top three criteria for judging a company's green cred.
Look at the whole company. Don't look at the product.
Hollander cites GE as an example. He applauds the company for eco-imagination, GE's clean energy venture. But the company doesn't get his green stamp of approval, not when it's still doing big business in nuclear power and coal, he argues.
What we find is companies doing something very good or trying to do something good with one hand, while with their other hand, they're still continuing to do bad.
Hollander's number two criterion, honest, accurate advertising.
Don't overstate it. Don't mislead people. And don't make claims that are totally irrelevant. Don't say this product doesn't have phosphates if it never did.
Hollander cites Toyota and British Petroleum as offenders, BP for running ads touting its green logo Beyond Petroleum when it's considering a sale of its green energy unit, and Toyota for airing tree-hugging commercials while lobbying against California's higher fuel standards.
You can't put an ad on TV, you know, with this Prius built with twigs and we want to leave no footprint behind. Well, you know, that sounds good, but it's, you know, I hate to say it, it's total.
Number three, transparency. Hollander says any company aspiring to be truly green should file a corporate responsibility report, preferably one that uses a global standard called the G3 guidelines. That way, he says, consumers can find out for themselves whether a company is backing up its eco talk with eco walk. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Online at marketplace.org, you'll find responses from the companies Hollander discussed. And see how our own greenwash brigade judges a company's green credibility.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Yahoo and Microsoft aren't hooking up, but Mars and Wrigley are, with a little help from Warren Buffett. We told you last week about this candy deal between two very secretive companies, but we didn't go that deep into it. That's why we have Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan. Alan, not many deals are getting done in this economic climate. How'd this one get done?
The way this got done is that Mars, which may have more money than God, is putting up $11 billion, or roughly half of the purchase price. And Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway, which has possibly the second largest amount of money after God and Mars, is taking another piece. So I would call this a leveraged buyout, but the leverage is very low. The gum business, people just love gum. People love the stuff. The cash flow is very predictable. So it ought to be a layup.
So should we read this as a sign that money might be loosening up a bit for deals, or is this a one-off?
I think this is a one-off, but that's such a good question. I need to chew it over a little bit.
You're killing me here. Talking about these companies being so close to the vest, I was reading a story that a few years ago, a kid wrote in to Mars and asked how Milky Way, the candy bar, got its name, and Mars responded that that was classified and confidential information. Why are these companies so close to the vest?
Well, Mars is a private company and has always been, I guess I would say, odd. Wrigley is a public company. It's been run by the family forever. I think it's the third or fourth generation, and someone named William Wrigley, up until fairly recently, was the CEO, and he's young enough to be one of my kids. I mean, I'm surprised they sold, but it's a very good price. All these things always look good in paper, right? There's never a deal done that doesn't look good on paper. But in theory, if you combine what Mars does and what Wrigley's does, you have a better position dealing with, say, Walmart, where the stuff is sold, or the big supermarket chains. You know, you have Buffett there blessing the deal and buying a piece of the action. And if Mars wants to grow, I mean, this is an enormous transaction for Mars. This is by far the biggest thing it's ever done.
All right. The Candyman, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thanks.
Have a sweet day.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagal. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.